What is going on, Diesel Nation? We're excited to have you guys with us today on the Diesel Podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube and aren't subscribed, make sure and click the subscribe button, turn on notifications, like, comment, let us know what you think about the episode. If there's questions that you have about your particular build or maybe something else you want to know about, or maybe even an entirely different topic that you know pertains to diesel or the automotive aftermarket, trends, news, things like that, we'd love to hear from you guys, and then also love to be able to turn those questions and comments into future episodes. Today we're going to be joined by Dan Clark. He's the owner of Dan's Diesel, and he sat down with the guys in the shop and is going to talk about turbos, fueling, tons of cool new things they're working on, how to size air and fuel for the power level that you want, and a lot of really cool projects and things they're working on. So it's going to be a great podcast. Before we get to it though, I want to remind you guys, our friends over at Kershaw Knives have a 20% off site wide code for you. Just use code 20diesel at kershaw.kaiusa.com. Great way to save some money and get some cool gear, whether you need something for hunting, fishing, EDC, around the house, at the job site. They've definitely got you covered. They got a ton of choices regardless of what your budget is. They can definitely make sure you get taken care of. So make sure and head on over if you're in the market. Take advantage of the discount code. All right, I'm going to pass this off to Dan Clark at Dan's Diesel and the guys in the shop and hear what they have to say about turbos, fueling, and a ton of cool things they're working on there at Dan's Diesel Performance.
Your little.
Oh, he's recording. Don't say anything.
All right. I plead the fifth.
So I suppose.
Yeah.
Jump right in.
Yeah. Let's get this podcast started. What's going on, everybody? I'm Dan with Dan's Diesel Performance, and you're listening to the Diesel Podcast. I have our production team with me today. I have Garrett, Colton, and Phil.
Hello there, listeners. I'm Phil.
I'm Colton. I work in our field department and then help out on the turbo side when they need it. Kind of do a little bit of everything. So,
and I'm Garrett, the lead fabricator and basically head turbo builder.
I do a little of everything. I do some machining, some helping Garrett, some helping Colton, something of a gopher over here.
Yeah.
Go for this, go for that.
So yeah, it's been a little while since we've done a podcast. We've been pretty busy in the shop working on, you know, big projects. Like we had Monster Max come in and out of here, and some of the pull trucks, and you know, working on turbos and injectors, R&D stuff, you know, and you know, personal things too. So it's been a little difficult to get some time set aside to do a podcast, but we're hoping to get more of these knocked out. So
yeah. Glad you mentioned that, Monster Max. It was difficult to just set time aside for our customer orders and things like that. So big thanks to you guys bearing with us on that. It was Garrett and I that did a majority of the work on that. So, and we were taken off of what we should have been doing to be doing that. So
while those two were doing that,
Phil was holding down the fort.
Just me in the fab shop and machine shop doing my best to keep up.
Yeah.
Yeah, Monster Max was definitely overwhelming. It was more of a bite that we thought we could actually take, but we got it done and did the best that we could.
For sure.
Yeah, we could do like a whole episode just on Monster Max and how much work went into that.
Absolutely.
And not just standard work, all the custom fab stuff that we had to do and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. But talk about why we're really here. Just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about what we do in our turbo shop, as far as turbo and injector development, some of the R&D we've worked on over the course of the last couple of years. We've just acquired a couple more machines as far as doing injectors, so that's pretty cool. Big things to expect there. Mm-hmm.
So what sort of stuff is on the horizon? What have we've gone from sort of older technologies to kind of more up-to-date things? What do we got? What are we looking at?
Well, it depends on you know, what product you're asking about.
Let's start with injectors. Let's take a look at where we've been and where we're headed on that, maybe.
So we've been building injectors here for a long time.
Well, you were building them before I started in 2016.
Yeah, and you know, it started off as just a simple you know, Bosch EPS 205 test bench, testing one injector at a time, sending the nozzles out to get modified, and then you know, we would assemble them here, you know, test them and calibrate them. Now we have our own EDM machine. We have a microflow machine, more test benches. So, you know, as far as turnaround time, it's getting a lot faster. A lot of different sizes of stuff that we can do now. And we used to only go up to like 100%. Now we can go, you know, as high as, you know, 500% on some stuff.
And just the fact that everything's done in-house now at this point, we have full control over, you know, what's going out as far as nozzles and things, or what's being produced, I should say.
Yeah, yeah, we can change things up a little bit too if we want to change the orifice size, orifice count, spray pattern, spray angle. Mm-hmm. You know, we can do a lot of stuff and, you know, get kind of custom for, you know, what the customer is asking for. Or if he's got different pistons, you know, we can change the nozzle to match those pistons a little bit better.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it depends on how the piston is made. You know, the bowl design, sometimes the angle will need to be a wider angle or narrow. Or some of the Duramax guys have those oval bowl pistons. So that's a possibility that we can, you know, change the spray angle of the injector to match the bowl better.
And keep in mind, that's very custom. I mean, that's for the competition truck.
Yeah.
We're not going to be doing that for essentially just your average customer.
Or, right.
You know, somebody that's wanting to build a street truck.
Right.
It's really not necessary.
You know, I'm not a fan of the oval bowl pistons anyway, but there are some guys out there running them. So,
right.
we can do that potentially. So, really cool stuff happening there. On turbochargers, you know, we've been building drop-in turbos for many years now. Still cranking them out. Everything from 64 mil up to 68 mil. So it depends on what the customer wants and what he's doing with the truck. We can build it for him.
And we really do have like a level of turbo for what anyone would want, right? From say a stage one 64 millimeter, which is basically just an upgraded compressor wheel, all the way up to a 68 with a GT40 turbine and a 68 millimeter compressor.
Yeah, yeah, and really, you know, you talk about pairing your turbo to your injector. You know, I mean, if you're running a stock injector, you're really not going to want to go above a stage one or a stage two, especially if you don't have any plans of upgrading that in the future, in the near future. So,
that's right, ladies and gentlemen, air and fuel are necessary for your engine to run properly.
Well, in order to make power, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I see a lot of people, when they have a truck, let's just take a Duramax, for example. This is what I see on a lot of the forums. You know, a guy will have, or girl, will have the piping done, the lift pump, the transmission, the tuning. You know, they've got the stock setup pretty much maxed out. And the next step, I would say 98% of the people are going to say, is a turbocharger upgrade. And, you know, I don't think that's always the case.
No. I mean, it really just thinking about your power plant, that's where I would start if it was up to me.
Mm-hmm.
What part specifically?
Transmission, you know, thinking about holding the power that you're getting ready to put towards the truck.
So let's say you've just bought your first diesel truck. You're new to the whole world of diesel. You want to start modifying it. You want to go faster and pull harder, but you don't really know where to start. What would you look for? What would your step-by-step be to upgrade that? And what would your goals be for different upgrades?
It kind of depends on the customer, actually.
Yeah,
What is the customer's goal? Do they want to go out on the weekends and race the truck and drive it on the street every day? Are they just strictly racing it, or are they competing with it in the stock diesel class and sled point? I mean, it all comes down to that.
So let's take it from lowest to highest. Just let's start with, say, just the average consumer that wants to have a diesel truck to have a diesel truck, and they just want a little bit more pep out of the truck. Probably not going to be pulling trailers, or if they do, nothing too large or too heavy, probably beating on it here and there, but for the most part, responsible. You know, just a couple extra horsepower, maybe a little bit better response. What's someone like that going to want?
Yeah, assuming he's already done the basic modifications.
Yeah, fast, you know, 150 or 95 or 165. Yeah. What is it, 105 now?
Lift pump, transmission, tuning, piping, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Say he's already maxed out. He should be around 500 horsepower, you know, at a safe injector pulse width. We'll leave it at that. I'd say that the next step, you know, is probably going to be, I'd say injectors, to be honest. I don't think that the gains from installing a larger turbocharger are going to be seen on stock fuel. I think that the first thing to do would be to put a little bit larger injector in there so you can utilize the air that's already available, but keep that fire in the bowl, the piston, where it belongs, and not spraying it on top of the piston where it's just going to cause more EGTs and smoke potentially.
Drive cracking pressure.
Piston could be, drive pressure. So
where would you say is maximum as far as injector size to just a stock turbo?
I'd say a stock turbocharger, as far as pairing for injectors, probably like a 45% over, 50% over, something like that.
And depending on generation truck, a lot of guys run SAC 45s, for instance, and LB7s with, you know, stock turbo and are happy with them, I would say. So,
yeah. I think it really comes down to what your power goal is. Mm-hmm. I just like to use 500 horsepower as a good base to what the stock fuel system maxes out at safely. Once you start getting into that 2,000, you know, 2,200 microsecond range, you know, you're out of efficiency window. So now you're spraying outside of the bowl of the piston, and the fuel's not going to be burning properly. So if you take a injector size, let's say, like, just percentage-wise, like a 50% over injector, for every percent, it's about 2 to 2.5 horsepower. So a 50% over injector is good for about another 100-125 horsepower, give or take. That puts you around that 600 horsepower mark. And, you're going to be burning that fuel more efficiently, keep the fire in the bowl. It's going to keep your EGTs down, drive pressure down. So that's what my recommendation would be. Pick your horsepower goal and then size your injector accordingly based on that goal.
For sure. For
sure. And then size your turbocharger based on what that goal is also. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, so that covers a mostly stock build. So let's take it a step up and say somebody's going to be pulling a fairly heavy trailer fairly often, but it's not quite a full balls-to-the-walls build. What's someone who's going to be towing a – Garrett, you've got experience here. What's a good-sized trailer? I'm a car guy. I'm afraid I'm out of my element here.
Well, it depends on the kind of trailer. I mean, you can pull a 14-foot skid steer trailer with a 10,000-pound skid steer on it. That's a decent-sized trailer for your average guy.
Okay.
Or you could have a 25-foot gooseneck that you pull your garden tractors or your farm tractor around on.
Right. And you could safely do that with a stage 264. I think we've seen over the past, definitely not a 68. If you're buying a 68, you're buying it for competition, especially ours. I mean, compared to other companies, 67s or 68s, however they decide to label them, I think ours is a little bit bigger and more competition-based.
Mm-hmm. So what is it about our 68 that is not necessarily the best for a daily driver towing sort of setup?
Turbine size, compressor size, and
vane size also.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that turbocharger is built to move a lot of air and a lot of exhaust. Mm-hmm. So, you know, high RPM stuff, once you hook to a trailer, your RPMs are going to be much lower. So you're going to have more EGTs, and it's probably going to be a little dirty run down the road just because you don't have those RPMs to spin that turbocharger efficiently.
That, and you start to lose drivability. I mean, really, if you're wanting a turbo that's going to be fun on the street, make some power, stage 264, 66, depending on injector size, obviously, would be more than suitable for most trucks out there.
Yeah, the Stage 2 64 is rated for 650 horsepower. So, you know, you pair that with a set of, like, 60 over injectors, you're going to be able to max that out.
And we've seen more than that on plenty of trucks as far as, you know.
That depends on the dyno, too. I mean, our dyno is a little tough to make good numbers on.
She's a beast, that's for sure.
But it's accurate.
It's accurate. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't give away participation trophies.
No, not at all.
But.
And another thing, too, that plays in a big factor on that is with, like, a 68 or something on your truck, if you're pulling a trailer, when your torque converter locks, you're pulling that engine down further and increasing your cylinder pressures. Mm-hmm. That's a huge thing that destroys engines, is cylinder pressure. You're going up a mountain or something, and the truck's going to want to. Yeah. I mean, when you go up a mountain or the side of a steep grade, your truck's going to want to downshift. So if you have a big turbo and a big tune in it, it's not going to want to do that. It's going to want to lug itself out, and it just increases those pressures in the cylinder, and that's how you crack a piston or do more damage than what it's actually worth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
would you say in that case, I'm kind of speaking from ignorance here, but would you say that you're underspeeding the turbo, and as such, there's the air that's being pushed in isn't moving fast enough, and that's what causes the problem.
Yeah, there's not enough RPM there to push the turbocharger into its efficiency zone, so you don't have as much boost, so therefore you're going to have higher EGTs, more smoke, because you're not burning that fuel efficiently. This is not a fun time.
Okay, so all of that could be solved with an appropriately sized turbo, a Stage 2 64 or a 66, depending on your fuel.
Yeah. It really all depends on what you're using the truck for primarily and buying the right parts for that application. So,
And keep in mind when Phil's asking these questions, he is a machinist. He is a great machinist, but the diesel trucks he's new to. So he's still kind of learning some stuff, and he's kind of playing devil's advocate here on things.
Yes, I'm doing my best on that. Definitely more of a car guy. I do like diesel as well, but I'm much less familiar with diesel than I am with cars or gas engines.
But hey, you're learning, right?
Indeed. I mean, this all is a learning experience. It's been fun so far, and I'm sure it will be in the future as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we've covered, you know, the daily driver, the tow rig. What's the 68 for then? Just the
like we said, competition use. I mean,
pole trucks,
trucks. Yeah, work stock trucks. You know, guys that go to the drag strip, or you know, just like the hot rod on the street every once in a while.
Right.
I mean, you can daily drive a 68. I just wouldn't put it to work.
Yeah.
Okay.
And really something that you're going to be pairing the proper injector size with. Really, 100 over is probably the minimum.
The minimum, yeah. I mean, you know, we're sizing injectors to 200% over for the 68s in some trucks. And, you know, it's nice when the truck is running about 1,500 microseconds, you know, keeping that fire in the bowl. It runs good.
I mean, you're saving your engine at that point.
Yeah, your EGTs are lower, and drive pressure's lower. I'd say the majority of turbo failures that we see come back are from excessive EGTs or drive pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, guys are running either stock injectors on 68 or even a 66, and just the tuner's got the pulse width set to 3,000 microseconds or whatever, and you know, it melts it down.
Yeah, and it's almost the same story on every single one. We don't see anything different. You know, you get.
The guy's like, oh, I was just driving down the road and it let go. Yeah, sure.
Right, and you get in touch with the customer and talk to them about it, and you know, we try to give them the benefit of the doubt in most situations on their warranty and claims and everything, but it's the same scenario: stock fuel, poor tuning, you know,
high vane pressure or high vane position. Mm-hmm. A guy will put that turbocharger on and tell his tuner, set it on kill. And It kills the turbocharger.
Yeah, they're driving it to the maximum every single time.
Yeah, and it's not just VGTs. We just had a couple S400s come in off of L5Ps that are running stock injectors.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. That fat pulse width is going to cause high drive pressure, high AGTs, and even the S400s can fail. So
yeah, which you could, I mean, it's kind of surprising to see that on the L5Ps.
Yeah.
Especially just because of what you can make power-wise on stock fuel, but you are still limiting yourself with stock fuel even on the L5Ps.
Yeah, the L5P injector isn't even that big. It's about the same size as what the LMLs are. Mm-hmm. So
the only thing saving it is the pressure.
Yeah. But I also think that, the way the engine's built too, you think like it's got, a better Y-bridge setup and, mm-hmm. Intake runners.
Yeah.
So I think that does help it make more power, but the same issue is still there.
Yeah.
So
this just in, folks, EGTs are not just a number. You will melt your hot side if you run them too high. Pay attention to your EGTs, keep them in check. We see a lot of melted vanes, a lot of melted inducers or parts on the turbine. Getting hot is not good.
Yeah. Well, the other one's also overspeed.
We see the
compressor wheel just literally ripped apart, and that's because the rotating assembly of the turbo was spinning so fast that the blades just literally ripped off like paper, and that comes from a lot of drive pressure and heat just pushing that turbo just too fast. And the bigger the turbocharger, the lower the burst RPM is. So you got to kind of keep that in mind when you're tuning the truck and setting it up for making the power you want to make.
Yeah, you go to a 64 mil, your burst speed's like 130,000-ish RPM. You go to a 68 and you're looking at like 110. So that little bit of difference in 20,000 RPM could make the difference from it failing or living.
I suppose that makes sense. You've got a wider wheel. The faster it spins, the further away from the axis of rotation your weight is, the more force it has. Mm-hmm. So bigger stuff needs to spin slower, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about, we've been talking a lot about drop-ins and things. Where do you finally draw the point where my build just it can't support a drop-in? It's too big. We want to run something bigger.
I'd say the drop-ins are good for that 750, 800 horsepower mark when really pushing on them. I know we've got some LV7 68 mils that are right at 800 horsepower, 790 horsepower. Mm-hmm. But above that, it's time to go into probably an S400. So you get a little bit bigger bearing package, larger turbine, higher flowing exhaust housing, and you go bigger on the compressor side too.
Right, and it's a sacrifice essentially with a drop in. You're sacrificing reliability on a bigger drop in. Mm-hmm. You're running a smaller shaft. You're making big power, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So you got to kind of keep in mind, it's give and take. You're keeping your drivability, but you're also losing durability.
Yeah,
as far as just construction.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus with the S400, now you have to get a whole install kit, and the availability of those is getting kind of scarce these days. Mm-hmm. So either you have to fabricate it up yourself, or you got to look outside of the United States to get what you want. So,
or even try to find a used kit somewhere on the internet.
Yeah. And from what I've seen on forums, guys are asking
new price. price for a 100,000 mile kit. You know?
So it's tough, but you got to consider that when you're buying a drop in, especially a big drop in as far as a 68, and you're pushing it hard and you're running it hard. There's a recipe for failure. Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing I've noticed, at least visually, is on the S400 style turbos that both the exhaust housing and the compressor housing look much more aerodynamic, because the factory Duramax turbos are a hot V style, so it sits in the middle of the engine block, and they've got to worry about packaging and longevity and all that stuff manufacturers have to worry about. So you'll see that the inlet to the exhaust housing and the way that it spins into the turbine is not necessarily the nicest path, whereas with an S400, it's much more direct, and it seems to me to be much more aerodynamic, and then same on the compressor side as well. It looks like it flows much better. Would that be a safe assumption there?
Well, you can't forget either that if you're putting an S400 in a Duramax, you also have a pedestal to connect your up pipes to your T4 or T6 foot on your S400.
Yeah, so you're keeping it similar, but yes, I mean, it does flow better, but again, you are sacrificing drivability. I mean, you're going from a VGT to a straight vane or fixed vane style turbo.
So yeah, you lose a little bit of that down low response, but they run good.
Yeah.
So. You can size an S400 to do what you want to do. They make them in, you know, all the way down to 64 millimeters, 68s. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from 64, 68, 72, 75. I've seen a couple 78s here and there.
80s, 76s,
76s, 80s, 85s, 88s.
We're offering some larger ones. Nowadays.
We do have a line of S400s as well. If you got the install kit to put it on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you have a Cummins, then it's not that big of a deal. I mean,
no,
the
not
parts
at all.
For that are available day and night.
Yeah.
But Duramax install kits are getting a little harder to find these days.
So, I mean, the Cummins stuff is the same from 1998 all the way to 2018.
Yeah, right? For the most part, yeah. Subtle differences, but
I mean, they don't call it a second gen swap for no reason.
Meanwhile, that range of years encompasses all of the Duramax generations.
Yeah,
there's a few of them,
and then the 6.5s too as well.
Ah, yes,
can't forget about old reliable.
indeed.
Oh boy,
we love a 6.5 around here.
The first remote mount.
But while we are talking about turbo failures, what are really some of the most turbo failures we see?
I'd say the most common would be the high AGTs, so like the inducer on the turbine melts and the vanes melt, and the other one is overspeed. But some of the other ones are the thrust bearing fails, and usually that's due to a boost leak or like a very restrictive air filter. We also see things get sucked in. So maybe a piece of slag from a fabricated intake or dirt, or maybe like the previous, like the stock turbocharger failed and they didn't clean out the air filter. So we got a little piece of shrapnel that gets sucked in.
Yeah.
See that. Oil. I know a lot of people like that 5W40 Rotella stuff. I'm not a big fan of it. Sometimes it's just a little too thin, especially if you're leaning on the charger, maybe sled pulling or something like that. You lose that cushion of oil in between the bearings and the shaft and can start to eat away at the bearings. So
that and operating in a warmer temperature.
Yeah.
540. You're limiting a lot of lubricity.
Yeah, I mean, it's good in the wintertime, but you know, in the middle of summer, I think it's just too thin.
For sure.
Some of the older trucks with their smaller oil coolers, the oil temps can get hot sometimes, and hot oil just doesn't have that lubricity like cool oil does, so that's a problem. And that's why we have remote feed line kits to pull oil from the side of the block right next to the oil cooler. So
which side do we install those on?
What, on the driver's side?
Yeah,
right next to the motor mount. Not on the passenger side.
No.
Where it's furthest away from the oil cooler. No, we don't like doing that.
Right.
Or from the valley port itself.
Well, yeah,
I have seen that before too.
Yeah.
Well, you got one of the flaws in the early Duramax is 0-1-10. They pulled the oil through the number 4 cam bearing, so you know the number 4 cam bearing is sharing oil with the turbocharger, so neither one is getting a good adequate supply, and sometimes the cam bearing will seize and start spinning on the cam, and it cuts off oil supply to the turbo. Like, we've seen guys send a brand new turbo in with the bearings are shot. There's no oil in the thing. And it's like, well, you probably have a bad cam bearing, I think.
Yeah, and we're not saying this to push a product. We're just saying it because it works. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
So if you are buying a drop-in or considering buying a drop-in, buy the feed line kit.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, if your cam bearing's spinning, it's not going to fix that. Your block is fucked anyway. But
exactly.
But yeah, it's going to definitely help the turbocharger.
Mm-hmm.
Vane response on the VGTs, that it does help that too, because you have more instantaneous oil pressure to actuate those vanes versus seeing a pressure drop through the cam bearing. So,
I think the biggest takeaway from all this is do your due diligence prior to buying your turbocharger and installing your turbocharger. And that kind of is another good segue into buying injectors and installing your injectors. We see it a lot where a customer buys injectors, you know, they install them, and a couple weeks later they're saying, hey, these are leaking. Hey, these are, you know, not flowing right. We've seen it a couple times, or the truck's not running right, whatever.
Well, I just did a set of injectors that were sent in for warranty a couple weeks ago. And they had not that many miles on them. I want to say maybe 10 or 15 miles. And the complaint was two of them weren't firing. So before even putting it on the test bench, these were brand new, like 60 over injectors. Before I even put it on the test bench, I just took the injector apart just to see if there's any contamination, because I don't want to put that into my machine anyway. And what I found around the needle spring was this black, almost like tar, built up around the spring and on the needle thrust member.
It looked like seaweed.
Yeah,
when you were pulling it apart.
Or plastic. It was a weird substance. And the fuel, you know, it was red, but it also it smelled kind of like a varnish. So it was almost like, I don't know the whole story, but it definitely had some bad fuel put in the tank. Maybe it was just the truck was out of fuel at the garage or whatever and decided to grab the tank on the farm or something and throw it in there. I don't know, but
whatever.
But yeah, it didn't like it. And every single injector that was sent in had that big chunk of black stuff in the nozzle area and also in the control valve and the armature. So it just took the full injector apart and cleaned everything in the ultrasonic, resealed it, put it back together, and it was operating like it was brand new again. So fortunately there was no damage done, but you know, it's one of those frustrating things. Like, you gotta make sure that your fuel is good, it's not contaminated. That's a great way to ruin a brand new set of injectors.
And then some. If your injectors just sporadically go out, there's probably a reason for that. There's more behind that than just the injectors failed.
Water is another big one.
Gasoline.
I mean,
diesel 911.
Or DEF.
You
know, we've seen where DEF is in the fuel. Mm-hmm.
How does that happen? How do you wind up with
it's usually either someone's not paying attention when they're filling up their
somebody
truck.
Really screwed up.
Or
we've all had those
mornings. Maybe as the wife went to filled up the tank. You know,
yeah.
It's not stereotyping here, but you know, mistakes do happen, and it sucks. DEF will wreak havoc on a fuel system. Diesel 911, like if your fuel is gelled, do not pour it directly into your air filter or your fuel filter.
Yeah.
Because as we found out in a set that came back last week, it will seize the needles in the nozzles and
control valves
will seize up. And they don't work, or they're just stuck on.
I mean, it's straight alcohol.
There's no lubricity, and it wrecks them. So,
that and ATF. ATF is not a lubricant.
Yeah, dude, I remember back in the day when people would say, oh, put a quart of ATF in every, you know, fill up, and it's going to help your injectors live longer. It's like, no.
Maybe on an old 7.3. Those things will run on horse piss, but.
I mean, the best thing is just a good fuel additive. You know, there's a lot of good fuel additives out there. Power Service is good. We prefer the Alliant Power Ultra Guard.
Which we sell.
Yeah, we do sell that.
Pick that up when you stop in if you decide to.
Yep. You have a summer grade and a winter grade. Yeah, there's a lot of fuel additive companies out there, and they all do good, but I'd stick away, or stay away from, you know, ATF and
two-stroke.
Yep, two-stroke oil, motor oil. Yeah, just give them good clean fuel and a good lubricity additive. That's all I need.
So basically, keep fuel in your fuel system.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, okay. And another thing to kind of touch point on is when you do the install, making sure they're seated properly, making sure they're torqued down properly. Yeah, we see them, and I'm saying this because I hate seeing the customers waste their money on sending them back to us and then having us retest them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then come to find out they're perfectly fine. I've seen it plenty of times, and you know, maybe it was, I didn't tighten this line down, especially on the LB7, so the truck's making oil, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The injectors are leaking, and they forget a return line tightened down or whatever it may be, and they're paying for it. So do your due diligence, guys. Really.
Yeah, make sure those injector boards are clean, like on the LOIs and
yeah.
There's a lot of them have corrosion or carbon buildup. If that copper seal doesn't seal up, you know, it's going to leak compression by. It can ruin your injector and your cylinder head. Torque them properly. Use some ARP lube on the threads and the bolt head.
Mm-hmm. That's something else kind of to talk about is balance rates. What do you think about balance rates? Everybody cries, oh, my balance rate's this, my balance rate's that.
I mean, the balance rate in the program is there to help the engine run smooth at idle. Once you're off idle, it goes away and the engine starts operating normal. It can help identify if there's a problem. If your engine's perfectly healthy, you've got equal compression on all the cylinders and your injectors are perfectly healthy, all the balance rates, when you add them up, should equal 0 or 0.1. But when you start seeing a positive number, and that can be attributed to an engine issue. So if it's just fuel injector problems, they'll still add up to 0 or very close to 0. But let's say you've got a bent rod or maybe a broken piston ring or, you know, a very bad head gasket.
Or even just valves being out of adjustment.
That can happen too. But if you, like, that cylinder is down on compression, you'll see a positive value, maybe like 7 or 10, maybe 15. And when you add up all the balance rates, you'll still have a positive value of like 15 or 10 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that is a more indication of a engine issue. But if you have, you know, balance rates that are kind of all over the place and you add them all up and they come back around to 0, it's an injector issue in most cases.
Right.
So
what about a negative balance rate?
So the way a balance rate works is, in order to create a smooth running engine from 0, either the injector needs to contribute more fuel than the last one that fired, or it needs to pull a little bit of fuel away. And we're only talking, you know, it's very small microseconds here of adjustment. So a positive value would mean, like, you know, that the injector has to contribute a little bit more fuel to, you know, I guess compensate for the last cylinder that fired. And then if it's a negative value, well, the previous cylinder that fired was a little bit too much. So it just kind of flips back and forth to keep the engine running smooth. And the old saying goes, if it's in neutral or park, if it's above plus or minus 4, you know, there's an issue. If it's in drive, plus or minus 6. But usually if there's a problem, there's going to be other symptoms that go along with that, like injector haze or maybe some knocking going on or rattle. But if the engine's running fine, like there's no other symptoms, I just, you know, run it, but keep an eye on it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it wouldn't hurt to throw some, you know, fuel additive in there or injector cleaner, see what happens.
Yeah.
So what can contribute to an odd balance rate? Like, let's say, for example, you've got one or two injectors that are just not playing ball. What leads you to have problematic balance rates outside of your tolerated range?
Well, assuming that the engine is in perfect health, injector age, you know, how many miles are on those injectors can play a factor, or you know, it could be just the functionality of the injectors. You know, if they got any bad fuel, that can cause them to not work properly.
Contamination, rust, brass, metal, anything like that.
Yeah, you know, carbon buildup on the nozzles. Yeah, and there's a lot of things that can contribute to balance rates being off.
Right. I just wanted to bring it up because we see it on the forums all the time.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you know, I just installed these. They're from so and so, whatever, and now my balance rate's this or that. And
or the guy's got the screenshot of his edge while he's driving 65 down the road. It's like something's not right here. It's like, well, yeah. Well, first you're not doing the test right. You need to be stationary. Mm-hmm. But
right. Yeah. I think people maybe stress a little too much about them.
Yeah,
and,
I think so.
And overlook. And just pure, in a lack for better terms, ignorance on it. They don't know what they're looking at. They're just looking at numbers. And
well, there's a lot of wrong information out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these guys that they think they're mechanics.
Keyboard
mechanics is what they really are.
Uh-huh.
And they're just given bad information. Some do it on purpose, which you know, I don't think that's cool. But
no.
You know, some of them just don't know the truth or you know the right information. So you know, so you know, we'll chime in sometimes and like no, based on what I'm seeing, this is not what you need. You got some other things to look at.
Yeah,
but
yeah, coming from a point of ignorance myself, I had no idea what a balance rate was before about 30 seconds ago. So if I just pulled up the tuner on my truck and saw that they were all not exactly the same, I'd probably be a little worried about it myself. And then, well, Dan, you explained it that let's say cylinder one has 2% too much. Cylinder two draws a little bit of fuel back to keep the force on the pistons and then consequently the crankshaft, everything, keeping it spinning at the same force, the same speed in balance and all of that. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that until just now.
Yeah.
And even if your engine's perfect and you have a brand new set of injectors, the balance rates are not going to be zero. You know, there's always going to be a little variance between every injector, and the ECM is going to make the adjustments to every cylinder's output so it runs smooth.
Essentially, you know, then it's just trimming fuel to make it run almost perfect.
Yeah, and then when you get into like the LMMs, the you know, LMLs and newer trucks, they actually have IMA codes or trim codes that's telling the ECM that this is what this injector does, and the ECM already knows how to make those adjustments ahead of time so it can even more fine-tune the idle quality.
Yeah. Basically, there's a whole lot of checks and balances on that, and the newer you get, the better they are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, technology has come a long ways.
Oh, yeah.
As far as injectors, turbos, you name it.
Well, I mean, even look at that. You look at a 2001 LB7 compared to a 2016 LML.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you had no iPhone in 2001, and now you're on a 14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't know about you guys. I'm having fun here. I'm learning a lot. This is Diesel 101 for me.
Yeah, Phil's going to come back to work tomorrow, a new man.
I'm going to show up tomorrow in a Duramax. Rest in peace to my bank account, but, hey, it'll be fun, right?
For sure.
So, how many turbochargers did we build last year?
Oh, that's gracious.
Well, I think it was around the 1,000 mark, maybe a little more.
It was a lot.
Yeah, production has gone up quite a bit as far as turbos, injectors, you name it, it's really gone up.
Yeah, we've been busy.
Like year to date or?
I was saying like approximately how many. I think it was around 1,000.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we started January of 22 at serial number 1677, and we're about 300 away from 3,000.
Okay. So maybe a little more than I thought.
And that was before we were even, or we'll think about even just before we were serializing these turbos, how many went out before that. Something to kind of touch point on is just as of recently, we acquired a new balancer. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, VSR.
VSR style balancer.
Which basically you're balancing the turbocharger fully assembled, you know, so as it would be in the truck. So we're running engine oil through the turbo. We're spinning it at 4,000 on the slow speed and over 100,000 on the high speed. So there is no balancing it on a rotor balancer and then taking the assembly apart, putting it together in the cartridge, and then sending it out the door. There's room for error there. Whereas with the VSR, it's assembled. The bearings are going to get pre-lubed. We're also making sure they're not, there's no leaks. And then package it up and send it out the door.
Yeah, which there was no, there's nothing wrong with doing it, I would say, on a, you know, like, for instance, our CWT or assembly balancer.
And we did that for a couple of years, two or three years.
And a lot of those turbos are still out there running and very healthy. But this is much more accurate, much more precise.
It's more more production beneficial
for sure,
because now there's a lot less steps involved, you know, as far as putting something together, taking it back apart, and then assembling it. So
talking about machines, touch base a little bit on our injector machines as far as what we have acquired over the last couple of years. Our EDM machine to hone out our new nozzles or our own nozzles and stuff, so things are moving along. As far as production.
We almost need more hands at this point.
I mean, we got a pallet of turbos end of last week, and they're already gone.
Yeah.
We shipped, 10? 10 of one model
stage 264s, 10 of them went out. So.
In 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Big thanks to our customers, but you guys are working us hard.
And going into that, I think everybody thinks we're bigger than we are in all reality. I mean, we're a company of 13 people.
Yeah. 14. As far as our production side, we are sitting right here. This is it. Yeah. Besides one shipping guy and
that's it.
A shop hand that helps out here and there. I just recently started putting him in the fuel room to just test injectors for me and kind of give me a little bit of leeway to do turbo stuff. So. Bear with us on things, guys. We hear it often of, you know, asking when this is going to be done or that, and we're working on it, you know.
We just take a little extra time to assemble those nice parts that you ordered with precision, care, and a dash of love.
Yeah.
Here at Dan's Diesel Performance, we love our customers.
How much time do we have?
Oh, we're at about 47 minutes now, so. Okay.
As far as things in the future, what do we expect?
Well, we need to get some Cummins turbo stuff done.
Yeah.
We do the 5.9s. We have a 64 mil and a 67 mil.
Which we barely have time to keep up on that if things did take off.
We don't advertise them because we don't want more work, but it's something that we need to expand on. We have the 7.3s, the 6.0s, and the 6.7 power strokes as well. So
that and a good bit of S400 stuff. So it as of recently.
Yeah. So even if it's not on the website, you know, just give us a call and we can get you set up. You know, Matt's been working pretty hard on the website and I've been doing some stuff on it too. But there is a lot of stuff that's not on there yet, so
we're trying. Definitely trying.
There's so many parts. Some might say too many.
Yeah, for sure.
There are a lot of parts.
And that's the thing. We started out just specializing in Duramax stuff and doing only Duramax stuff. But to grow, you have to expand, you know, and we have the equipment and knowledge to do it, so why not?
That's right, power stroke and coming, guys. we care about you too.
Yeah.
We're getting there, slowly but surely. Don't worry.
Transmissions, Allison Transmissions.
Mm-hmm.
Whitman's been building those things left and right. He's still got a few on the build list to get done. So it seems like when he's almost caught up, then all of a sudden get a bunch more orders come in, which is awesome.
Yeah. And that's something else we could maybe talk a little bit about is just our lead times on transmissions. They've gone down quite a bit.
I remember, what was it, 21, 22, it was like 3 to 4 month lead times, just how backlogged we were. And the other issue was parts. Alto and some other companies, you know, everything's on back order.
Freaking COVID took a hit on everybody in the diesel community.
Yeah. So. And, you know, just getting parts in, supply chain issues. So that does put a little bit of a damper on things, but finally getting almost caught up. So,
the great TCM shortage of 2022.
Oh, yeah. GM's been on back order on TCM since September. Mm-hmm. And, actually, before that, I think A50s, they were out middle of July. And then all of a sudden, we got a bunch of calls for them. And it depleted our entire inventory in a matter of a couple of weeks. So, you know, now it's... Yeah, we're just kind of waiting for a GM to get them back in stock.
Yeah. But sitting completely on idle.
I mean. Yeah, I see guys that are paying, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 for TCMs on eBay, or a couple thousand for used ones out of salvage yards, and you know it sucks because you know without a TCM the truck is completely useless. So.
Has GM said anything about like a timeline for when they might have more, or are we still in the dark on that?
I've heard from a couple people that they're expecting them in early Q2 23, so April. Hopefully they get them back in stock, but I would imagine that there's going to be a huge demand. I'm sure there's tons of dealerships that have them on back order right now. You know, we've got a big order on back order right now. So hopefully they have enough coming to keep up with demand.
And we don't know how it's going to really pan out. In most cases, I would assume that the dealership's probably going to take priority over us. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do buy a lot of them, but we're not a GM dealership, right. Unfortunately.
Right. But, you know, I guess rumor has it that the manufacturer that they were using before quit doing it or went out of business or whatever. So GM had to change suppliers. And with the chip shortages, this new supplier has been having issues getting the ball rolling. So, but we're starting to hear actual timelines now. So that's a good thing.
Indeed.
And fortunately, like during the winter time, we don't see a whole lot of TCM failures.
Right.
I still think the biggest cause of failure is the GM engineers mounting that TCM to the fan shroud. You know, you got the inlet to the radiator right there next to the TCM. So you put it in the hottest part of the truck. So I think the best thing you can do is take the little push pin out, pull the TCM off and stick it over by the fuse box or like on the LMLs, put it between the battery and the ECM bracket. Just get it off of that heat source and probably won't have any issues with it.
Yeah, that'd be a good conversation for a couple of our mechanics as far as GM engineers. They deal with it every day.
Well, I think worst kind of engineer, probably a John Deere engineer.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've worked on my fair share of John Deere equipment, and I swear they're out to fuck people. That is their job, is to make fixing a simple repair as most complex as possible.
Well, they got to make their money too.
Yep,
that does track with their current processes.
Don't they say something like an engineer will climb over a pile of virgins just to screw over one mechanic or something like that?
Yep, correct.
Yeah. Yep. So, well, I think this is a pretty good episode.
Yeah, I would say. Maybe touch base a little bit on injector sizes that we're going to potentially be offering pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
There for a while, we only offered, say, like 100%. That was pretty much our cap.
Yeah, for sending the nozzles out to be modified, we were limited to about 100% over. But now that we have the equipment, you know, we can go quite a bit larger than that. I've got the LB7 5.9 program down, so we're going all the way up to 500% on those. Mm-hmm. My next task is to take on the LOY through LMM.
Right.
And then probably do some 6.7 coming stuff.
Yeah.
And then work on the piezos, so LMLs and the 6.7 power mm-hmm. strokes. Yeah. So
a lot of R&D is in the works.
Yeah, I mean,
things are coming together.
Just got some LFIP injectors in for do a little R&D on those.
Yeah.
So looking forward to taking one of those apart and seeing what we can do to them.
Yeah. So look out for it, guys. In the future, as far as injectors, turbos, a lot of R&D in the works.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And it's cool to be a part of it.
So. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. It's fun. I feel like a scientist.
Well, for me, I really like learning. So, you know, taking an injector apart and making one little change to something, like maybe change a shim or, you know, modify the nozzle or whatever and put it back together, run it on the test bench, seeing what that change did. You know, did I pick up the output that I wanted? Did I get the pilot injection just right? Is it idling where it's supposed to be? You know, it's really cool seeing the little changes that you make, you know, and what the result is. Mm-hmm. So
that hands-on way of researching it yourself is also a great way to figure out what exactly does what. So what exactly do you need to change or leave alone on a unit to make it do what you want?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this information isn't out there on the internet, so you kind of have to do trial and error.
Well, nobody's going to tell their secrets.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. You know, so.
Yeah, I'm not going to tear apart somebody else's product to figure it out. So,
right. You
know, we'll start from the top and, you know, work our way down, do one thing at a time, see what the change does. But it was pretty cool working on a 400% over that a customer inquired about. We wanted to see if we could do it. And, you know, I probably took that injector apart and made modifications to it probably 20 times.
And he's not kidding. When I went back in the fuel room to just kind of do my regular day-to-day, there was like 30 test sheets scattered across the fuel room.
Across the desk.
Yeah, across the desk and stuff. And it boils down to a lot of trial and error and just figuring it out. And that's mm-hmm. where I would say you really excel mm-hmm. on things. So that's where what got you to where you are now.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us here in the production side of stuff have kind of helped with that. You know, we try things and it doesn't work and okay, well, we got to do it this way.
Yeah, and adapted that knowledge and things. So,
right. I mean, I think on our production side, we've got a pretty good group of guys that know what they're doing. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like we're always coming up with something new, some new way to speed up the process, optimize it, the way, even if it's just the way we move around the shop. You know, we've always got something in the works.
Yeah. Just the fact that we've outgrown our building, what, 2-3 times over again
mm-hmm.
at this point. So,
yeah, a bigger facility is definitely
in needed. The works.
So,
but yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, guys, and we're looking forward to our next podcast.
Yeah. All right, listeners, adios.
Signing out.
Don't forget, Diesel fans, make sure and head on over to kershaw.kaiusa.com. Use code 20diesel for 20% off site-wide. It's a great way to save some money, get some cool gear for EDC or hunting, fishing, you know, something to use at work or around the house. They've got a ton of choices for you. If you're a knife enthusiast, they've got different blade steels to pick from, opening mechanisms, handle materials, or if you just need something to work hard, regardless of what your budget is, we appreciate our friends over there offering that just to you guys. So this code and them sponsoring the podcast is just to be able to help our listeners and, you know, our little fan base. So we encourage you to head on over there. Also want to give a shout out to some of our Patreon supporters, Tyler Lowen of 23 Diesel, John Caleb. We appreciate all of you guys and the support you've given us throughout the years. Also, all of you who are on our Discord, subscribe on YouTube, podcast apps. You guys keep us going, keep us on our toes. If you have a recommendation for a show or a guest, make sure and find us on Instagram, Facebook, or you can email us at info@thedieselpodcast.com. Drop us a line. Let us know what you want to hear about, somebody you want to hear from. We'll make sure and get them on the podcast. Until next time, keep the shiny side up.